Chapter 12. After the short yet eventful day of setting up traps, we all retired back to our dwellings. I was so exhausted I ended up crashing on top of one of the carved-out stone seats in Batari's dwelling, while the rest of my crew sprawled out across the house in various positions, some uncomfortable and some not. It was the best sleep I'd had since we'd left the Dragonkin Island. I snoozed all the way from sunset until late the next morning, and even then I was only awakened by a soft pounding on the door of the home.
"Come on, you lazy bunch of wadhorns,"
Ashanti's voice teased from the other side of the door.
"I already think this whole excursion's a waste of time, so I don't want to get starting any later than we already are."
I groggily stood up from my makeshift bed, stretched so I could crack and pop every bone in my tired body, and then wandered over to the door. I pulled it open with a wooden creak as I rubbed my eyes and sighed. And then I was greeted with the sight of both Ashanti and Batari. "Aren't we missing the third musketeer?" I joked through my haze. The two Chero women looked at each other with raised eyebrows and confused frowns on their face.
"Are you referring to Rikuri?"
Batari asked. "Yeah, I thought you three always did everything together."
"Not this time, unfortunately."
The white-haired rhino woman shook her head.
"We need one of our best warriors to remain behind so she can teach the others about the traps and how to defend the village should it come under attack. I don't know whether or not to be offended."
Ashanti huffed.
"I always thought I was your greatest warrior." "You're my greatest archer,"
Batari noted.
"Rikuri's far superior to you when it comes to hand-to-hand combat. But I know you can hit a chirping mire from several mere strides away. That's why you're coming with us. We'll be facing down several of Tambori's hand-picked guardians, and even though I love her style, Rikuri can't eliminate large numbers of enemies in a short time. You can." "Okay."
Ashanti smiled and crossed her arms.
"I guess I'll take that as a compliment."
"Just wait here for a second," I said with a raised finger. "I'll go wake up everybody else."
"There's no need to wake everyone."
Batari shook her head.
"I only want a small party to come along for this one. It'll make our travels much easier, and it'll make us much less conspicuous should we come across any enemies along the way."
Damn. This little encounter with the orcs must have really shaken the Queen Mother. It was starting to feel like every decision she'd made was made to counteract another orc attack. Hopefully, once we found the horn and summoned the land dragons back to the village, Batari would be more at ease. "How many are we thinking, then?" I asked the white-haired Chero woman.
"No more than 3.
Batari explained.
"And each person who comes along must have a purpose beyond just extra fighters. We need your picks to be concise and useful."
"All of my friends are useful. Each and every one has their own special talents that could help us along the way."
"Then we'll need the 3 most useful for this mission."
Batari snorted.
"Actually, 2.
Ashanti interjected.
"The soothsayer must be one of your choices, as he's the one with the most knowledge of these creatures aside from us."
"Jonas?" I shook my head. Look, I love the guy, but he's much more useful as a purveyor of information than he is a fighter."
"That's irrelevant,"
Batari retorted.
"We already have plenty of fighters between myself, Ashanti, and you."
"And Mira. If we're going on a mission like this, then I want my best warrior along for the ride as well."
"Then that just leaves one. One of the Kunag women, perhaps?"
"If we're going for stealthy or sneaky, I don't think that's the best idea. They're a lot more smash and grab and scream while doing it when it comes to pretty much everything."
"What about Honora?"
Batari suggested.
"She's a healer, right?" "She's also an archer,"
Ashanti reminded her leader.
"We've already got one of those."
"Kandara, then. She's got wings and a big brain full of knowledge about animals and plants and all that. If we don't know what these Matrai are, maybe she could identify their behaviors, attack patterns, weaknesses, and other stuff like that. Plus, she's really handy with her fan blade to boot."
"The winged woman it is, then."
Batari smiled.
"Gather up your friends. Meet us by the Mirax stable as soon as you can."
With that, the two Chero women turned and headed in the direction of the stables. And once they were gone, I headed back into the dwelling and began my search for the 3 travelers. Mira was easy to find, as she was sprawled out in the bed. Honora and Nima were both snoozing at her side, and all 3 women seemed to be sleeping in a comfy pile at the bed's center. I walked over to the bed, leaned over the sleeping ladies, and gently nudged Mira on the shoulder. Her soft golden eyes opened slightly as she grumbled and brushed a jade lock from her forehead. But when she realized it was me who was standing over her, the Dragonkin woman's eyes lit up, and a smile spread across her lips.
"Good morning, Ben,"
Mira purred.
"Oh, did you sleep well?"
"I slept great. But it's time for our next journey to begin."
"Can't we sleep in for 10 more minutes?"
Nima's soft voice asked through a yawn. "You two both can," I said to Nima and Honora. "Mira's coming with me, though."
"Oh, sounds good to me,"
Honora grumbled before she rolled over and buried her face into the pillow.
We're not all going.
Mira sat up and tilted her head to the side. Batari wants to keep it small. You should be happy. You're one of the only three travelers I get to choose.
Oh, happy days.
The golden-scaled warrior joked as she slid out of bed.
Who are the other two, if I might ask?
Kandara and Jonas, the animal expert and the soothsayer.
Not bad choices.
Mira nodded.
What about the dragons?
I didn't ask, honestly. Though I'd imagine if she wants to be stealthy, that means it wouldn't be a great idea to have two lumbering beasts following us around all the time. Mira and I went over to Jonas, who was napping on top of a patterned rug on the dirt floor. His body was in a spread eagle position, and the soothsayer's peppered black hair was unkempt and messy as he snored away. As we got closer to the old man, I noticed his mouth was moving, as if he were speaking.
No, Jonas muttered in his sleep. I don't think I'll take any more of your pickled boar feet. Give them to the dragons.
Mira and I glanced at each other with confused looks and tried our damnedest not to laugh. I then reached out with my foot and gently nudged Jonas's right side. Instantly, the soothsayer shot up at the waist, looked around in panicked tweaks, and let out a soft sigh when he realized it was just us.
I was having the pickled boar's feet dream again. The dragon can cook before Hali. Raishun always made sure he used each and every part of the boars we captured. You wouldn't believe the kind of horrible things he made us ingest, Draco Rex.
Oh, I would. Wait until I tell you about hot dogs.
Hot dogs? Jonas quirked his head. Do you mean to tell me your species ate dogs, as in canines?
No, hot dogs are the leftovers from the butchering process. Tongues, liver, leftover fat trimmings, all mixed up into a bunch of slush and then stuffed into intestinal casings.
You actually ate that? That sounds dreadful.
It's actually pretty damn good, especially when you slap it into a bun and slather it with mustard, onions, and some relish.
And I thought Raishun's cooking was bad. It sounds like the cuisine of your people was borderline inedible.
Yeah, that actually sounds about right. Anyways, we woke you up because we're about to head out on our journey to find the Great Horn of Ivory. Jonas rubbed his eyes.
And you want me to make sure everything is all and well in the village while you are gone?
No.
Mira shook her head and smiled.
We want you to come along with us. We could use your knowledge on the journey of this nature.
Suddenly, Jonas leapt to his feet, clapped his hands together, and grinned from ear to ear. I honestly thought he was about to break out into, "I've got a golden ticket," for a second, but the soothsayer just quickly fumbled his belt back around his robed waist and looked at us with a gleam in his eyes.
Then I shall be at your service, Draco Rex,
he said with a bow.
I cannot wait to learn more about this horn and the strange mysticism that surrounds it.
We just need to grab Kandara and then we can be on our way. The three of us found the butterfly woman sleeping peacefully upon one of the large clay shelves that had been carved into the wall of the dwelling. Kandara laid in a fetal position with her knees pulled up into her chest and her arms wrapped around them tightly. Her head was buried in her knees as her emerald wings flapped in a slow rhythmic motion. I reached out to wake her up, but Kandara's head instantly raised in response.
Oh, good morning,
the Morpho woman said with a stretch.
How is that even comfortable?
Mira questioned as Kandara turned her body and hopped out of the cubby in the wall.
What do you mean? That's the only way to sleep if you're a Morpho. How else are you going to fit into your cocoon snugly?
Well, I suppose that makes sense. I shrugged. I spent the next minute or two explaining to Kandara what was going on, and the butterfly woman was beyond enthusiastic in her response. She agreed to join our party instantaneously, and then she quickly snatched up her fan blade and attached it to the loop on her silk pants.
We better get out to the stables, then?
Mira interjected.
We don't want to keep Ashanti and Batari waiting any longer than we already have.
Should we find the Kunag and the dragons and let them know what is going on?
Jonas offered, but I just shook my head.
Nah, Honora and Nima both know what's happening. They can fill them in whenever they wake up.
Our four-person troop gathered up any of the things we thought we'd need. All of our weapons, a bit of rope, a crude hammer tool, and, of course, a bag full of Harry Berries. We didn't dare go out onto the savanna without the magical little berries that could fill a dragon's stomach with a single morsel. Once we had everything in order, we headed to the stables, and when we finally arrived, we saw Batari and Ashanti already atop their Miraks, as well as Zikiyu holding the reins of another oversized ant. Swa'er's furry red figure was curled around Batari's left arm, and I could see the little guy's whiskers flickering as he rested his head on the Chera woman's shoulder.
There you guys are.
Ashanti whistled when she saw us.
I was beginning to wonder if you decided against coming. Wouldn't blame you if you did. I doubt we're going to find anything on this trip anyways.
Have a little bit of faith, Ashanti.
Matari rolled her eyes.
I do have faith.
The Chero with the shaved head retorted.
I have faith Tambori hid the horn away for a reason, and that reason wasn't for us to go snooping around looking for it.
Hi, Ben.
Zikiyu purred as her dark eyes locked onto mine. The short, brunette Chero woman nervously twiddled with her golden necklace, with her free hand, as I approached, though her body language remained poised and confident. What's this for? I asked, and pointed to the single ant she held on to. Are you joining us on this one, Zikiyu?
Oh, Tambori's tusks, no. I need to remain here and man the stables. This Murak is for you, Ben.
For me? I frowned. I've never ridden a Murak before.
Sure you have.
Matari reminded me.
You rode one when we all first met.
Well, yeah, but I was just a passenger on your Murak. I don't know how the hell I'd control one.
You don't need to control them.
Zikiyu shook her head.
You simply need to show them you're a trustworthy companion, and they'll do the rest for you.
It's honestly kind of like what happened with Swire and I here, only much easier to pull off.
You bond with the Muraks like you do a dragon. How does that work?
Not really a bond. It's not like there's a single Murak that every Chero woman is bonded with, and they only use that particular beast. Once you bond with one Murak, they'll gladly let the rest of their kind know you're trustworthy. Then you can ride any Murak you like.
That sounds awesome. What do I need to do?
Are you ready for this?
The brunette asked with a coy smile.
'Cause it's pretty important.
I'm ready. I nodded as I slowly approached the Murak at her side. What do I do?
You see that bag around Kandara's waist? Take it off, bring it over here.
Okay. I noted as I turned around and held out my hand. Kandara raised a red eyebrow before she slid the bag of hairy berries off her person and handed it over.
Now, bring it here.
The Murak handler commanded. With the bag of berries still in hand, I walked over to the large beast. This time, the Murak's antenna perked up and pointed in my direction. Bits of drool began to drip out from between his pinchers, and his eyes seemed to narrow. He wanted a berry. I slowly reached into the bag, pulled out one of the small red morsels, and held it in my hand like it was a delicate piece of jewelry. Then I extended my hand so it was just below the Murak's jaws, held it out as a peace offering, and watched as the creature reached out and sniffed it curiously. The next thing I knew, the mandible of the oversized ant snapped shut directly onto the berry and picked it up in its jaws. The creature then tilted back its head, opened its mouth wide, and released the hold on its berry. I watched as the berry fell into its maw, and then the creature swallowed it up with a quick gulp. The Murak released a short, shrill, snickering noise as its mandibles and antenna went wild, and in the blink of an eye, the giant insect's face was pressed up against my empty hand, and he continued to bump it like a dog begging to be petted. I scratched the ant on the underside of his head, and he responded with a strange, trilling noise.
See?
Zikiyu chuckled.
It was that easy to earn his trust.
So, what happens now? Can he read my mind or something?
Not at all. We've trained the Murak to respond to simple commands with our legs. Squeeze them together to charge, tap them gently in unison to trot, and bump one at a time whenever you want to turn in that direction. Now that he trusts you, the Murak will obey those commands when you give them to him.
That was super easy, actually. All you have to do is give them food and they love you?
Well, not just any food. It has to be the right kind. Baratu actually has a funny story about when she first tried to bond with the Murak. She thought it would be a good idea to offer him prancer meat. Long story short, it was not.
Oh, I remember that.
Ashanti snorted.
Didn't we have to pull her out from underneath a giant swarm? We did.
Batari reminisced.
Ooh, she was horrified. That's why she refuses to come out into battle with us. Because the Murak don't trust her at all, and she's afraid they'll turn on her again.
Well, shit. It's a good thing I had these berries, then. I'd hate to make an enemy for life.
Now that we have that out of the way, shall we head off to the Salted Plains?
The Salted Plains?
Jonas asked, and his eyes gleamed with curiosity.
Is that where the Great Horn of Ivory is located?
We believe so.
The white-haired Chero woman nodded.
In the legends of old, it said Tambori hid the horn in a place where the ground was rich in minerals. A mineral that drew all species of animal out to it and made it difficult for anything other than cloudbrush trees to grow in its mystical supplement.
Definitely salt,
Kandara noted.
All the different species of animals would come there to indulge in its taste, and it would kill any plants before they had a chance to grow.
Exactly.
Batari agreed.
I believe the Great Horn of Ivory is out in the Salted Plains, though I'm not entirely sure where. That's where the riddle comes in.
Ashanti sighed.
The riddle that always confuses me greatly. If you seek to find the dragon's prize, first you must look to Tambori's third eye.
Huh. I'll admit I'll need to think about that one for a bit.
We'll have plenty of time to talk about it on the way. Now, shall we?
Zakiyu continued to hold the reins of the Murak as I climbed up onto its back. Though it appeared slimy to the naked eye, the creature's skin was actually quite smooth. A bit cold and clammy, maybe, but it wasn't the disgusting texture I normally would have associated with an insect. As soon as I was on top of the ant, Mira climbed up and wrapped her arms around my waist.
Room for one more?
She teased, and then she kissed the back of my head tenderly.
On that note,
Jonas cleared his throat and raised his finger into the air.
May I slip onto one of these beasts? I don't have wings like Kandara, you see, and...
Hop on, Elder.
Ashanti chuckled as she patted the area behind her. Jonas scrambled over to the Chero's ant, hoisted himself up, and then positioned himself so he was right behind Ashanti. The soothsayer threw his arms around the rhino woman's waist, and then stared off into the distance as if he wasn't going to acknowledge the awkwardness of the situation. Batari just rolled her eyes and shook her head. The Queen Mother then let out a whistle, and her aunt took off. Ashanti and Jonas were right behind her, followed right up with the flying Kandara. That just left Mira and I. Hold on, I warned the Dragonkin warrior behind me. I'm not licensed for this thing yet. I squeezed my legs against the Murak's thorax gently, and the beast let out a trill as his legs began to move. The sudden lurch forward caused Mira and I to both jerk backward, but we quickly caught ourselves as we continued to scurry behind the others. The Murak moved in short bursts of scuttling energy, and it was a tad jarring at first. However, once we got used to the bumps and bounces, we settled into our positions. We were both used to riding dragons anyway, so this sort of thing didn't really seem out of the ordinary whatsoever. Our search party traveled across the savanna for nearly 2 full hours, before we noticed a change in the terrain around us. As we ventured onward, the legs of the Murak started to squelch against the ground, and our pace started to slow. When I surveyed the surrounding areas, I quickly realized the normally clay-like soil had turned into a soft, squishy mud. A very thin layer of moisture rested at the top of the ground and glistened in the rays of the sun, and I could smell the brackish scent almost immediately. Yeah, these were definitely the Salted Plains. Off in the distance, several herds of animals lounged around on the plains with their heads bowed down so they could lick up the salty goodness that oozed from deep within the ground.
I've never seen such a place,
Mira whispered, as our Murak wandered through the briny terrain.
What in the name of Oshun could possibly cause it to be this way?
My guess is this is a spot close to the shoreline, or a river that connects directly to the ocean. Every time it floods, the salty water spills out onto these plains and covers it completely. It isn't quite enough to kill off all the grass, but it's definitely enough to make it an uninhabitable ecosystem for most creatures.
Other than the Matrai, apparently,
Mira noted.
The Chero women seem very convinced they're going to be waiting for us.
We have to get there first, and until we solve that riddle, it's going to be really hard to figure out where this horn is located.
You're telling me,
Ashanti chuckled, as she slowed her Murak to a halt.
Look at all these cloud brushes.
The three-horned rhino woman was right. Mighty tall cloud brush trees stretched all across the horizon as far as the eye could see. They were all in different shapes and sizes, and there was quite a bit of space in between them. However, one thing was for sure. We didn't have the time to go around and explore all of them.
All right, soothsayer,
Batari announced as she glanced over at Jonas.
What say you about the riddle?
Me?
Jonas gulped and pointed to himself.
I don't think she's talking to the Murak,
Swa'er snickered telepathically.
You seem to be the most wise and knowledgeable of the Draco Rex's crew. We hoped you'd be integral in trying to solve this mystery.
Well, let's start off with some simple questions.
Jonas pondered as he stroked his chin, deep in thought.
Tambori only has 2 eyes, correct? At least that's what the statue back at your dwelling indicated.
As far as we know, yes.
Batari nodded.
In our legends, it never quite specifies, though this riddle is the only place that claims Tambori has 3 eyes.
So it's probably metaphorical, then. I wonder if it's talking about another eye-shaped feature on his body. His nostrils, his ears, maybe his ass.
Please don't finish that sentence!
Swa'er shuddered.
I have to cover all of our bases, I shrugged.
Hold on,
Jonas snapped his fingers.
Remind me if I'm wrong, but does Tembori have markings all over his body like you do? His third eye could be referring to one of his markings, maybe one that runs parallel to a map of these plains.
Not a bad idea,
Batari admitted.
But Tembori doesn't have markings. We were created in the image of the Lord of the Underworld.
Ah, Dragon Tongue. I really thought I might have been onto something there.
See? It's pretty much hopeless.
Don't give up just yet, I grumbled in response. Do we know where Tembori hid the horn? Like, I know we've narrowed it down to this area, but is there any indication of where he would have put it?
It's in a cloudbrush tree,
Batari explained.
The legend states Tembori climbed up one of our sacred trees and then blew the horn from on high so every dragon in the world could hear its call.
So it's for sure in a tree, I nodded. That's actually kind of helpful to know.
It is. I thought we already knew that.
We assumed it, and you know what they say about assuming things. Mira remained silent, and I immediately realized that, no, she didn't know what they said about assuming things.
Is this another one of
your... It's another saying from my world. But basically what I'm getting at here is I wonder if the riddle has something to do with the trees themselves. Like, is it referring to the order of the trees or the way one of them is shaped or something like that?
These are cloud brushes, Ben. I don't think any of them are shaped like an eye.
Well, from down here they aren't. But what if they form a pattern from above? You've never had the ability to fly before, right?
That's right.
Ashanti gasped as realization dawned on her.
We've only ever seen these trees from the ground. Swire?
Batari looked at the little dragon on her shoulder.
Do you want to do some scouting from the skies?
Swire gulped as he looked toward the trees. It's all right. Kandara can go with you if you're afraid of going by yourself. Isn't that right, Kandara?
Of course!
The golden-haired morpho woman grinned.
We can both fly up and take a look at the trees.
Swire's eyes were filled with fear as he looked at Batari, but the white-haired Chera woman just nodded her head firmly, so the small dragon unwrapped his lower body from around Batari's arm and hesitantly floated into the air. The little red dragon slithered over to Kandara, who just smiled at him and patted his head like he was an over-anxious puppy. Swire's slender yellow whiskers pulled back against his face as he thought about whether or not he wanted to trust the butterfly woman. But soon the thin lip noodles flicked out to his sides.
Okay, fine. Let's do this.
Kandara's wings fluttered as she raised up a few more feet in the air, and Swire followed close behind her. The morpho woman looked like she was intentionally taking it slow so Swire wouldn't be afraid, though the little guy still didn't seem sure if he'd made the right decision or not. We all watched from our mounts as the two figures floated up until they were just underneath the canopy of the clouds. Swire and Kandara hovered in place for a few moments as they scanned the horizon, but they weren't exactly making any major announcements. If there was anything to see from above, it wasn't coming easy.
Anything?
Batari asked her dragon through their bond.
Not that either one of us can see.
Swire's infantile voice answered.
All I can see is how far away the ground is from us right now.
Try not to think about it. Try to focus on something else, like the pattern of the trees below you guys. There was silence for a few brief moments, then Swire spoke up again.
Unless this Tembori guy had some really weird eyes, I don't see anything that looks like one.
Well, shit. I guess you guys can come down, then.
Oh, thank goodness.
Swire's voice trembled. As the two flyers and our crew descended, the rest of us tried to think of anything else in the riddle that could have been a clue.
Well, what about the idea of the dragon's prize? What if that's a clever play on words, and it's not referring to the horn whatsoever?
What would a dragon consider a prize?
A giant hunk of meat,
Swire interjected telepathically.
Well, that's the ultimate prize for me.
I doubt the horn is hidden in a giant hunk of meat.
Tilt I.
Mira sighed and rubbed her temples.
Why is this so difficult?
It's a riddle made by an all-powerful omniscient god. It's not exactly going to be as simple as a crossword puzzle. Wait a minute. What if that was exactly what it was? Maybe I was looking too deeply into this whole thing and the answer was actually something amazingly simple. That's when it hit me. Third eye, I sputtered, and then the light bulb turned on in my head. Third eye! Everybody stopped what they were doing and looked at me with curiosity on their faces.
Are you all right, Draco Rex?
Ashanti chuckled.
Don't tell me this simple riddle's fried your brain.
Guys, I smiled at everyone. It's not third eye as in the third organ that allows you to see. It's third eye as in the letter.
I'm not following.
So the riddle's referring to the eye in his name. How does that help us find the horn?
There aren't any I-shaped cloudbrush trees, but there sure as hell are cloudbrush trees that are shaped like the letter I. My thought process must have finally clicked with the Queen Mother, because her eyes went wide, and a smile crept up the sides of her mouth.
An I-shaped cloudbrush. That's gotta be it. Swire and Kandara, can you fly up there again, see if you can find a cloudbrush that looks like the letter I?
In all honesty, I still haven't learned my letters, but I'll try.
We're on it!
Kandara proclaimed as she took to the sky once more, with Swa'er right behind her. The two airborne fighters rocketed straight up, halted just below the clouds, and then surveyed the area once again. This time, however, they found something.
She sees one!
Swa'er announced telepathically, and everyone who could hear him exchanged an excited glance.
At least I think she sees one. I don't know for sure, but I'm gonna trust her word on this one.
Fly toward it. We'll follow you guys on Mirak back.
Sure thing!
The Wind Dragon promised. Kandara and Swa'er then took off and headed to the northeast of our current position. After them! They're taking us to the tree that looks like a giant eye! Ashanti, Batari, and I all commanded our Miraks forward, and they scuttled through the squishy floodplains with the speed of a horse. We followed Kandara and Swa'er for a solid 10 minutes before finally the tree in question rose up from the horizon. Sure enough, it was shaped like a massive eye. The roots of the tree were wild as they peeked out from underneath the ground and spread across the landscape in a horizontal pattern. Meanwhile, the trunk of the flora rose up nearly 200 feet into the air, and then its branches sprouted outward in a pattern that was perfectly symmetrical to its roots.
Oh, this has to be it,
I declared as we got closer.
This has to be the tree the legend is talking about.
Soon, we arrived at the base of the tree, and we all just stood there in awe of just how tall it was. However, we didn't come here to gawk at the natural beauty of the Chero Island. We came here to get this damn horn. There's only one way to find out if this is it for sure. We need to climb up and see if there's a horn in those branches.
I just can't believe it,
Batari muttered as she continued to stare up in awe.
The legend is true. I'll admit,
Ashanti sighed.
I was wrong to doubt you, Queen Mother. This is the closest we've ever come to anything from our sacred legends, Ashanti.
The white-haired Chero woman murmured as tears began to roll down her gray cheeks.
It's like every single second of our people's history has led up to this moment. The only thing that's missing is a sign from Tembori himself.
As we all stood there, waiting for the moment of wonder to subside, I began to hear a strange noise behind me. It sounded like the Mirak's footsteps as they passed through the muddy terrain. But it couldn't have been any of ours. Yet, the sound persisted. I turned around on my mount, and my jaw instantly hit the ground.
Guys?
I gulped and pointed to the field around us. In the wet ground around us, several mounds had appeared out of the soil. They were only about 2 feet in circumference, but they were rising out of the ground all around the tree, and they were growing larger by the second. Finally, the first creature emerged from the mud. It was about the size of a small dog, with 6 legs nearly as thick as its body, and flattened to a dull circle at the end. The creatures had insect-like features, as their forms were clearly divided into a head, thorax, and abdomen, and they had a set of antennae on their heads. What threw me for a loop, however, were their other appendages. 2 long, pointed ivory tusks jutted out in place of mandibles, and smack dab in the middle of the creature's face was a foot-long trunk like that of an elephant's. Damn. Tembori really did make these things in his image. More and more of the Matrai pulled themselves from the mud, shook off the remnants, and then turned on us with a sharp hissing noise.
Well, I growled as I drew my sea-glass sword. You wanted a sign from Tembori that we are in the correct spot? I think this is it.